Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to QLS Classic, episode 97, with DJ Jazzy Jeff from August 2018. What can I say? Jazzy Jeff is simply the best, most creative DJ of all time. There is no DJ today worth their grain of salt that doesn't worship from the altar of Jeff Towns. And if you know, you know. So, without further ado, I present you the GOAT of all DJs, straight out of Philadelphia, DJ Jazzy Jeff. Here we go.
Suprema, Suprema, roll call. Suprema, Suprema, roll call. Suprema, Suprema, roll call. Suprema, Suprema, roll call.
Another episode without Fonte.
Yeah.
Unpaid and Boss Bill.
Yeah.
And I'm stuck with Stephen Laia.
Yeah.
Ah!
Roll call.
Suprema, Suprema, roll call. Suprema, Suprema, roll call.
This dude can spin.
Yeah.
This dude makes tracks.
Yeah.
This dude can cook.
Yeah.
This dude can act.
Roll call.
Talented motherfucker.
Suprema, roll call. Suprema, Suprema, roll call.
It's like Ian.
Yeah.
And this role kind of ain't easy. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I love me some Jeff.
Yeah.
Like Jazz love Hillary.
Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
My name is Fest.
Yeah.
My crew is New Steel.
Yeah.
It's called the Trinity.
Yeah.
We don't fight like Drew Hill.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
My name is Jeff.
Yeah.
His name is Fess.
Yeah.
It's Stephen Laia.
Yeah.
And that's my brother Quest.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
Oh, man, yo.
Who would have known?
I have to say that of, I mean, we're not at 100 episodes yet, but we're at least at 80-something.
80-something, yeah.
That is probably the quickest thinking of the feat. I've had world-renowned MCs
yeah.
just like up. You?
Hey, man,
you kind of killed Rhyme Fest.
You might have, I think you bodied your, he bodied the verse.
Yeah. I wrote that for him.
That's my ghostwriter right there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another anemic episode of Questlove Supreme, only on Pandora. I'm still here with what's left of Team Supreme.
Damn.
You know when it get hot outside, niggas start disappearing.
I know. Sugar Steve's still here, even though, you know, you're a network star now.
Plus, I have every excuse to call in sick. You know, mentally ill, among other things.
Yeah, I see. Well, thank you for still sticking.
Mm. Hey, man, I never missed the show.
I assume that Fonte is still working on his his basement
top. Fuck
him
and his counter.
Yeah, his countertops. He's week number five working on his
bathroom.
How
are you going to miss work to work on your house?
Hey, man, bathroom tiles are important. You know, it's extremely important.
Meanwhile, both Bills have medical conditions, so there you go.
I thought, Bill's not at Sesame Street right now?
No, Bill's getting his wisdom teeth out.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, I guess I can excuse that. All right. Shout out to Boss Bill, who has a headache right now. So, wait, I don't know, because if something happens in the future, I don't want this to sound bite to be played.
He has a severe headache right now.
Yes. Shout out to Boss Bill and his many headaches. So, I just want to make sure that I'm not the source of the headache.
Mm.
So, All right. Less stress in your life, Bill. I promise to be better. But you got to admit, I am improving since the beginning of Questlove Supreme.
You have, but then you stop sugar and you back, so, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Laia is claiming that I'm evil because I'm day 51 without sugar.
I'm just saying.
So,
I'm still here for you.
Is that possible?
Thank you, Steve. Huh?
Is that possible?
If you want to live, it is. I'm just saying that, you know, 23, 24, 25,
yeah.
Your concern was like getting shot at the club.
Yeah.
The new getting shot at the club is
diabetes.
Getting a stroke. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't want to be that person.
I mean, you still got your boyhood figure, Jeff. So, how you do it?
Listen, I do 160 dates a year and walk like 19 miles through the airport.
What, so. Wait, I was going to say. Wait a minute. Time out. We're doing this ass backwards. Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, did we not do that?
Oh, I forgot to introduce our actual guest of the show. Ladies and gentlemen.
It could be Jeffrey Osborne.
If God.
We already had.
He was our last guest.
My bad.
Yo, did you know he played drums to Smokey Robinson?
No.
You know what we forgot to ask Jeffrey Osborne? And we do this often. We often rabbit hole ourselves and introduce like a half hour down the line. I forgot to even talk about Whitney Houston's Didn't We Almost Have It All. He wrote that for
us. Oh, shit, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Damn, that's a banging song.
He wrote that for us. Anyway, ladies and... Okay, introducing Jeff. Yeah, if God were a DJ, he'd be named Jeffrey Towns. That's all I have to say. It's going to be the shortest intro ever.
Yeah.
We have God himself of turntables, Philly's own. DJ Jazzy Jeff, the legendary DJ Jazzy Jeff on Questlove Supreme.
Wow. It would also take that.
It would also I'd be remiss if I didn't also mention that you're here with a very special guest.
Yes.
Another God in his right. Mm. Grammy and
Oscar
winner.
Okay.
Now with Sherman, now with unpaid bill was here. We have somebody to.
Oh yeah, get his for his get.
Well, yeah, because you know, I think unpaid bill is an eek.
Right. One of our co-hosts, he has a Grammy, an Emmy, and a Tony, but he's missing your O.
He's missing an O. Okay. So if he was chilling with unpaid bill right now, we'd have a ghetto, not an ego. Ron Fest is here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah. What up? Saving the world.
Yeah.
And also, I should mention your new project, M3.
Yes.
Right now, digitally available, but when will it be in store? Will it be?
It's in stores.
It's in. Hard.
No, hard copies are coming. Listen, I'm doing this all independent, so I hard
understand.
Copies have to come a little bit later, and they're on the way.
Okay, good. That's good to mention. Yeah. Yeah, so you were saying that you keep in shape because you just run across airports
nonstop.
See, but that's the thing. My Achilles heel is being on the road because, you know, for every coffee shop in every airport, hotel food.
I can dig it.
It is. So how do you resist that? And I know you live at home in Lynette's kitchen.
Yes.
Which, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you guys catch your fish and all your seafood in the backyard of where you live. So, like, how?
Just remaining active. It's not even an exercise thing. You know, it's really when you got 60 pounds on your back because you try to take every gadget in the world and you're pulling a little portable studio on a pull bag and you're in London Heathrow and your gate is 35 minutes away.
I know that, yeah.
You know that feeling. So it's a lot of walking, you know. You get mad when you first go out because you're winded and you're tired and you're mad and your knee hurts. But by the time you come home, I would say you're O.J. Simpson, but
right.
You know what I
you
mean.
You know, I know what you mean. Yo, wait, have you ever successfully, to me, like, to successfully navigate through Heathrow without them thoroughly checking my bag? Like, Heathrow is one of the most anal retentive airports in the world.
Yes.
Like, you can have a piece of, like, gum in your bag, and if you don't take it out to let them know that, then they're taking your whole entire fiber apart of that bag.
Or you just wait for your bag to go on that separate lane.
Ah, it's the worst feeling.
And then
in
that separate lane, you realize that there's 19 people in front of you.
In front, right. You're missing your flight. So yeah.
Y'all travel too much. That whole thing was like...
No, it's for real. Like, Heathrow is one of the most anal retentive... I mean, most of them, Quali rhymed about that, even on their first record. Like, the first time I ever had to have the check was at Heathrow.
Has there been, between the two of y'all been around the world like 50,000 times, has there been anywhere you haven't been yet?
I just went to Kenya. That was my first time in Kenya.
What was that like?
That was probably top three experience of my life.
Why?
What?
Listen, first of all, I was, you know, I don't change the way I play anywhere in this world.
See?
At all. Because let me give you my reasoning. You don't go to Africa and play Afrobeat. That's the shit that they hear all the time. And that's the biggest mistake that I think a lot of DJs, because think about it, when you get DJs that come to Philly and be like, oh, I'm about to play Crown Rulers, and you kind of like, come on, dude.
Right.
I came to see you play. I didn't come to hear you play how you think I want you to play. So I never change the way that I play. Because people, you're a seasoning. You're a dish in a restaurant. You don't change the dish. You just called me out. I mean, listen,
it's never too late though, right?
Yeah, but because you know what it is? It's kind of like, imagine going to your favorite restaurant and they change the menu every week. You upset. You like, I came for the fish. I want the fish and the cornbread. What's the meatloaf?
Okay, but I'm going to ask you about the Kansas incident.
Mm-hmm.
That's always my worst nightmare.
Well, you know what it is? Kansas was me walking into, that didn't have anything to do with me playing. That had more to do with the wrong event in the wrong place. You know, like you can't, you know, because I've had situations like that when, you know, DJ AM passed away. I did one of his memorials in Las Vegas, and I did it in a place that they didn't want you to play hip hop. And I'm kind of like, how do you have me do a tribute to a hip hop DJ and not play hip hop? Like, I'm kind of like, yo, so you trying to do this shit by name only?
Wait, that's still going on? Like,
well, it not now, but it was.
What was the name? Can you name, what was the name of the club? Or
what's the situation?
Okay.
What
was the, it was, tell them the Kansas Steve, story.
Well,
I don't want to start with the bad DJ gig verse. I want to start with the early DJ.
It's all the right. God. He got them all.
I was on tour with Scion.
Okay.
And Scion was doing these parties all over. And we went to Kansas City and played in the Power and Light District. And it was funny because I got there. Z-Trip went on before me. And I came out and we started playing. Like 5,000 people outside. We started playing and people are rocking. And, you know, my sets are very eclectic. Like, I'm going to play some hip-hop. I'm going to go here. I'm going to do this. And, you know, at the end of the night, you're going to get a little bit of everything. And my road manager at the time came out and put a towel on my table and walked off. So I look, and I'm looking at the towel that I already have, and I'm just like, why did he bring a towel over? So he came out and brought a bottle of water, and I had water on the table. So I knew something wasn't right. So he ended up coming over the third time, and he leaned down and he said, listen, they're about to cut you off because they're saying that you're playing too much hip hop. And before they cut you off, I wanted to let you know so that you can make the decision. I said, oh, shit, tell Skills, we're out of here. So he went and leaned and told Skills, and Skills turned and looked at me and was like, word? And was like, yeah. So right in the middle of everybody rocking, I just said,
so poof. People are rocking?
Oh, listen, it's nonstop. Nonstop. Like, I think I was playing Rihanna at that. So I hit the stop button, and Skills said, hey, I'm sorry, Kansas City, but we just got word that they don't really want us playing hip-hop in here, and they're about to cut Jeff off. So before we let them do that to us, we wanted to make the announcement to you that we apologize, and we hope that we can come back and play for you soon. And took everything off, and I walked off stage. Everybody thought it was a part of the show. So they
stood there thinking it's a part of the show.
For about 2 minutes, and when the road manager started coming out and breaking my equipment down, people went off.
Wow.
And I went downstairs in the dressing room. Skills was standing outside, and they kicked Skills out the venue because they were mad. Like, they went, this is the behind-the-scenes thing that you wasn't supposed to pull the curtain back.
Whoa.
So the hotel was across the street. I ended up walking across the street and had no idea how big this was. And I remember, this is early Twitter, I posted, wow, right party, wrong place. I was like, this is the first time that someone ever threatened to kick me off in 25 years. And went and checked into the hotel. I called, you know, my manager at the time, and he was like, change your flight. You know, we had like a 9 o'clock flight. He's like, get on the 6 o'clock flight. He said, because I guarantee you they're going to be pressing everybody at the airport. So I changed my flight.
What?
And we got on the plane and flew at 6 o'clock. And I landed. By the time I landed, Associated Press had called me. Like, it hit everywhere. And I was just like, it got so bad that the owner of Power and Light was the owner of the land of 4040 Club. And it got so bad that he called Jay-Z for Jay-Z to call Will, for Will to call me, because he wanted to talk to me. And he was like, listen, I need to meet with you so I can officially apologize.
Didn't you win the first Grammy for hip-hop?
Hey, listen. They was trying to get me to come back.
Like, what did they... It was just the area of...
No. It had nothing to do with that. It was kind of like... You know what Power and Light is like? Power and Light is kind of like, I don't want to say Xfinity Live. It's like one of those, but it was kind of like, we're not really trying to have that hip hop element. Because from what I heard after I left was they were like, you know, we don't normally come down here. They don't like you in sports jerseys and baseball hats. And
that's it
was
Xfinity. One of,
oh, it's just black people.
Yeah, basically.
Lucky
so
strike.
Setting that tone.
Just code talk.
But you know how it is. You kind of, sometimes you skate under the radar because it's like, that's Jazz from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, not knowing that I'm playing Mobb Deep.
But what was Z-Trip playing? Like, because
Z-Trip
I know-
was playing mashup. So he was sneaking. He was sneaking. But understand, no one said that. Like, all of these dates that we did, no one said, when you come here, that you have to play like this. Like, you know, a lot of times people tell you how you want to play. I'm like, I'm cool. Like, if I can't do me, then
how do you handle it? Because
I don't accept that at all.
Even at the most prestigious gigs.
Listen,
of...
I won't take them. If you don't want me, then don't book me.
Always your whole career.
Always. If you don't want me, don't book me.
Man, I
because you know how it is. Vegas got like that. You know, Vegas got to the point that it was kind of like, well, we kind of want this. Like, I remember...
Do you dread Vegas now?
Listen, I don't do Vegas anymore. I get a million offers to do Vegas, and I turn them down. But you remember, like, we you know, Quest and I had a residency at the same spot.
Okay.
And I never forget the first time that I did it. When I was done, they came down, someone said, well, we'll have a report for you. And I was like, a report? I ain't never had a report. What's a report?
Wait, a report?
Like, we're going to give you a report. You know, and it got to a point that, you were great and this was cool, but it was kind of like, so you got people down here, like, checking on me. Like, I've been DJing in Vegas before everybody who works here.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, you know, I'm like, at the end of the day, if everybody's having a good time and they buying drinks and everybody's cool, leave me alone.
This is weird now because it's like, the notoriety that you have that allows you to DJ in spaces that your average guy. Okay, well, I'll be explicitly honest because I mean it's the white elephant in the room. Obviously, you and Cash are Philadelphia gods,
mm-hmm.
and your level of celebrity has allowed you more oxygen and more.
Yep.
Leverage and where you are now, and it's also on how you freak it and how you handle your business.
Mm-hmm.
That part, you know, so I can't ignore that. But it's like, are you? I'm the type of person that dreads when November comes around, because in my head, usually when December gigs come, I'm always like, damn, January is coming, and it's going to be another year where someone born in 2002 or someone born in 1999 who'll be 21 or whatever, you know, won't know what Don't Stop Till You Get Enough is. Mm-hmm. Or it's like those records that used to be instant. Yeah. Oh, my God.
They changed.
Like, you remember how... Like, you would play the opening horn riff of, like, Troy.
Yep.
And it was, like, chaos. And then the moment...
Do you remember when it stopped? You remember when that stopped?
Yeah, yo, when
I had one of the worst incidents. Well, my first incident of that, I did it. Howard's Homecoming.
Oh, no.
And I remember when you do the whole... You know, I remember when you would play all of the current stuff, and then you would kind of go into your
shit,
Eric
right.
B for President, and everybody would lose their mind.
Right.
And I dropped Eric B for President, and everybody just stood there. And I was like, wow. Like,
yeah.
Because now, Eric B for President is the entrance to where I'm going. So I'm like, oh shit, you don't know the door that I just opened up. I don't know if I can go in the house now.
Yeah.
So I was kind of, you know, and I remember that. But that was the first time that I learned the lesson that you have to pay attention, because every few years, the timeline slides.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it was, I remember, you know, a couple of years ago going overseas playing and somebody dropped Eve, Who's That Girl? And the club went crazy. And I was like, oh shit, this is their classic now.
Yeah, so that was their old school.
So you just have to keep, your music set up in a way that you just have to slide it. Like, you got to pay attention to who's out there.
But are you ready to admit that Frontin' by Pharrell is now the new message by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five?
Yeah.
Like, that's old school now?
Well, you know what? This also comes down to who are you playing for? You know what I mean? And
so are you playing for yourself or are you playing for the crowd?
No. Listen, I do a very, very good mixture of playing. I take enough me gigs to make me happy. But my job is to play for the people.
So wait, when you went to Kenya, because we started this with Kenya. So now I want to know, in reference to Kenya, like, what made the crowd go crazy, and what was their throwback day?
So where we played, it was a restaurant. So we went and ate, like, when the club opened up. When I was telling you, they was playing Mary J. Blige album cuts. Mm-hmm. Like, it was 100% pure black music and deep black music.
And they appreciated it.
To the point that I was kind of like, oh, if that's where y'all go, oh, I'm good. So, you know, it was everything from some classic house stuff to Mobb Deep to, like, I couldn't stump them.
Go ahead, Ryan Fest. What were you saying about?
Oh, no, like, you know, like, so I dance a little bit, you know what I'm saying? But when you go to Africa, like, you just insecure, you know what I'm saying? Like, you like, man, it ain't no dance that I can do that's going to impress nobody out here. And then, but when Jeff played that music, it's like you're in the home of where rhythm started. Mm-hmm. You're in the home, like, when you get, I heard the black people in America was from West Africa, but when you go to Kenya, they be like, welcome home. And you look around like, really? Like, you know, yeah. And you be like, this is all mine too? Like, and you know, just the welcoming atmosphere, but you know they got, like, bodily and musical superpowers if they want, because that's where it starts.
How many days or weeks were you guys there?
We were there for 3 days.
Really?
3 days. We played, like, the first day we got there.
Coming straight from America? Or
No. We were out for a month. Whew.
Okay. I was about to say, like, for 3 days, it's like lag, do the gig, have some food, and
well, listen, it gets like that. We were in Dubai, and we flew from Dubai to Kenya. Okay.
And that food was good in Kenya?
That food was amazing.
Talk about it.
First of all, the seasoning. You know, because everybody has this whole thing of, when I'm going to Africa, I'm going to eat necessarily African food. Like, they have their food.
Right.
And then they have food that everybody eats, you know.
It's weird. When I went to South Africa, there was a place that it's almost like they know what foreigners are looking for.
Yeah.
Like, that Africa, you know, like, they're looking for that. And they actually they have a restaurant that plays up to that whole thing. But I could tell it's just, like, for tourists. Yeah. Like, I asked the guy, I'm like, real Africans wouldn't eat this spot, right? And he laughed, like, no, this is just for tourists. Like, yeah. They went the African.
They took us to the real deal.
Really?
Like, we ate at a restaurant that was overlooking a African preserve that, if you sat at your table and squinted, you could see a giraffe.
Ooh. What?
But yeah, it was deep. Like, I asked, there was a big security guard that was with us, and I was like, let me ask you a question. Like, how close are we to the lions? Like, and he was like, not so far. Like, so he said,
they just roam freely and...
Yeah, yeah. Like, they'll come in the hood.
Word?
Yeah.
Yeah, they told stories about gorillas that cross the road, and if one of them get hurt, the car's got to stop. And if you try to ride past them, the gorillas will jump on the car and bang your window.
Yeah.
That type, like, of you Africa. Have to, you, we went you, to that part of Africa.
Yeah, you got to stop and let them.
What?
Yeah.
You serious?
Yeah, it was. Oh, listen, we went to an African animal
orphanage.
Yeah, that was. First of all, let me explain. Wait, something.
Michael Jackson,
right? I was like an animal orphanage.
The guy was telling us that when a lion roars in full voice, you can hear him 10 miles away. So the lion will roar into the ground and vibrate the ground. That's how he lets everybody know, get out my way. But
oh, that's a Debo warning.
Listen, they were feeding the lion, and the female lion came over to try to grab a piece of meat from the male lion, and the roar that he let out, I let a little bit go. That's all I'm going to say. Like, I ain't never heard no shit like that.
She wanted the big piece of chicken.
Listen, like, that roar, I was kind of like, I'm cool. I'll take my lions in the zoo. That was a little deep.
I gotta figure out a way to get over there.
Anyway, I'm glad that I'm here because they are greatly wanting you to come down.
Ooh,
and play.
Can I go? I'm
so- Dude, like greatly want you to come down and play.
I'm saying that no one has ever carrot on a string teased me more than the entire continent of Africa.
But you've been to a couple places. You did South, right?
I've been to South Africa.
South is different. I've been to South. South.
Yeah.
You go to South Africa. You almost don't get cool points for going to South Africa no
that's
more.
That's America.
Like, where you going? I'm going to South Africa. Yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah. Like, I got props when it was like, I'm going to Kenya.
Word. Right, over what? It's like how South
you,
Africa.
How did you hook that up?
They just called.
Really?
They called and was like, listen, and it was crazy because once I accepted Kenya, then Tanzania called and all these other people. And it was just like, it was a little too late for that.
Now that I know what I know, I gotta, you know.
Yeah, you need to go. Like,
I'm going to Benin or Nigeria.
What I will tell you, you will absolutely body that. Like they asked, they were like, who do you want to come down and play? And they were, oh, we love Premier. He was like, we would love Questlove. We don't know if we can get him. I was like, I'll talk to him because I'm like, oh, he.
It's
will,
not that I don't want to go.
You
it's
will
a
destroy that
time. But wait a minute, I know you're meticulous about your back line.
Mm-hmm.
So do you now just travel with all of your equipment?
No, I just.
So they have Pioneer turntables there, or Pioneer just ships them?
Yep, they have Pioneer turntables, had an S9 mixer.
What?
Yeah, S9's everywhere.
They got that in Kenya? Come on, man.
Okay. Shit. Whoa.
Yeah, listen.
It's Obama's hometown.
I sat down.
When I was there, they had the Flintstone bird. It's a living.
Oh, not laughing at
No, I'm just saying, back in 2008, you know, if I had to send a carrier pigeon to send a few breakbeats over to me.
Yeah, no, they were cool.
Okay,
they were cool. They gave me a bunch of music, too.
Okay.
So, you know, I go down there. I was.
Do you get tired of people giving you, like, all their 12 inches and the 45s and everything?
You can't say that outright because... You know,
I'll just
you almost need to carry a bag for the stuff that people give you on a tour.
Exactly.
Because you just kind of come home and it's kind of like, you know, like I really, really appreciate this t-shirt. Just like I appreciate the 22,000 t-shirts I have.
I get, right.
That you want me to take the t-shirt with your album cover artwork home.
Well, it's almost like you could travel like a Navy SEAL now. Like you probably could just, you know. Live off the swag that's given to you on the road.
Pretty much.
And that's that. I will kill myself if I don't start the way I always...
Good, I was waiting for you to.
We always start at the beginning.
Right.
But it's also been a long time since we had an episode of...
Bitch, you guessed it!
Ow!
So, Jeff, as the music extraordinaire that you are, and being one of the many, one of the first pioneers to actually introduce jazz samples to hip hop. We do a game called "Bitch, You Guessed It," in which I will play a quarter of a second of a particular song, and you have to either guess the artist or the song.
He said a quarter of a second. Yes,
of a second.
He did.
Quarter of a second.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Some are easy. Some are not.
Yeah. I know you.
This is I'm just saying. This is round one of.
Bitch, you guessed it.
Okay. Can you name this break?
Rocket in the Pocket.
You are correct. This.
I could do that.
I know it. That's the who makes that? It's the original I Don't Want to Be a Player.
Yes.
Piano.
Brenda Russell.
Brenda Bam. Russell.
Thank you, Laia.
It's the first
Listen,
one
I might need help because I may not know the names, but you'll know that I know what I'm talking about.
All right. Number three.
Brandon Funk or Bouncy Lady.
Yes. I love how you just co-opted. co-opted. that pleasure break. Okay.
Do that one more time. Yeah, that's together.
The Message by Simone. Yes.
See?
Me and the Biz.
You ready?
Yeah.
Number five.
Ooh, one more time. Yeah, you might stump me with that one. Wait a minute, one more time. Nope.
One last time.
Nope.
Game over.
What was it?
That was Ohio Players singing in the morning.
See, he got me there.
Biggie's ready to.
Rip.
All right, that's you're allowed a strike. Number six.
Is that Parliament Funkadelic?
Yes. Right. Dun, 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 dun. Number seven.
Oh, that is it. A bird is it playing Johnny Guitar Watson.
Superman Lover. Yes. Yeah. Number eight.
That is the original. Be a Father to Your Child. Edel G and the Bulldogs.
You're close. Wrong single.
Not Be a Father to Your Child. Yeah, you know what I'm talking. I gotta have it.
Yeah, Bo Hannon.
Burn up.
Song, singing a song for my mother.
Be a father to your child was that shit.
All right, two more left. Two more left.
Mm.
Last one. All right, second and last one.
The original Dre shit. Yeah, that's Chick Moaning.
I want to do some freaky to you by Leon Ware. Side note, I actually thought that was my mom.
Oh.
No, only because Dre uses my parents' sample in that shit too. So I thought
that you knew your mom.
Oh, this is a little weird. I'm sorry, mom, for putting you out there like
hey,
this.
Miss Jackie,
shut up.
Sorry. Uh-oh.
No, my mom has a similar sigh.
I'm not Let's touching say, that.
Oxygen breathing technique
an
on
exhale.
On her record. Yeah, an exhale on her record. So, I was very relieved to find out that, no, that wasn't my mom. But, she does something similar.
That's enough topic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, your last song. Okay. All right, this is the Kamikaze.
One more time? That's not... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That was a banger song.
Only did that because of your connection with Jill Scott and getting in the way and her dropping that. Anyway, even though I know it, Sir Jeff Towns, could you please tell our audience almost 3 hours into the show where you were born, what city?
I was born in West Philadelphia.
Where in West Philadelphia? Like, are you allowed to talk about your old neighborhood now that you don't live there?
I am. I'm from 57th and Rodman, which is right next to 57th and Cedar, which is between Baltimore Avenue and Market Street, which is funny because, you know, the north side is basically the north side of Market Street.
Mm-hmm.
South side is south of Market Street, but before Baltimore Avenue.
So not southwest.
Past Baltimore Avenue or southwest.
So in 85, how close were you to that move fire?
Oh man.
Because Rodman's right behind Osage.
Yeah. I was about 5 blocks away. Like literally heard the gunshots. Like the night before Right. You know, everybody in the neighborhood was just like, yo, something's going on. Because you knew Move were there, you know, just going on the block.
Oh, I went there.
Be outside with the bullhorn.
Jack Jones was like crawling on the floor.
And it was crazy because that night they were like, yo, something is going to happen. And we went up to Cowes Creek Parkway and it was, I've never seen as many cops. I've never seen a SWAT team, you know, in real life. And they all were out there, the big floodlights. And, you know, we stayed up there for about 2 hours. I mean, you couldn't get but three blocks close to it. And then we went home. And I never forget, it had to be about 5 o'clock in the morning. I have never in my life heard 20 minutes of sub-automatic weapons being fired in your neighborhood. Like, it was nonstop. And, you know, you didn't know. Like, you're hearing this through your window, not knowing what's going on, and you turn on the news and, you know.
So you had no clue that in 24 hours, entire blocks were going to be burnt?
No, bomb would drop.
Was there any?
Like, we saw the helicopter fly over, and we saw when it dropped it.
Same.
And we didn't know what it was. We saw when it dropped it, and you heard this incredibly loud boom that shook everything in the neighborhood. And we were just kind of like, what was that? And they were just like, they must have dropped some kind of explosive. And then the fire started. And, like, to realize this might have been 3 o'clock in the afternoon and no one came. Like, there wasn't a fire truck around for a good 5-6 hours. So to watch it burn a complete block down, and you know how the blocks are, that they're connected.
And they
were spreading. It burned a block down and went through the alley to another block and burned one side of another block down.
As an outsider, I'm still surprised how y'all let this go down, but I'm just going to say that. I don't understand Philly.
Y'all, you are a Philadelphian.
I am, but I was in D.C. at the time, and I just know, I felt like if it would have happened in D.C., a bunch of black people would have took hands, and got around the neighborhood and been like, I'll be damned if you're about to bomb these black people and these babies.
Well, no, you didn't know. You didn't know that.
You didn't know.
Like, understand, this is all news media, and this is after all of this gunfire, and what happened was people didn't know, which I personally believe that I don't think anybody from Move shot. I think this was the police shooting at each other because all it takes is one shot, and it was just gunfire that no one was kind of like known to have shot somebody. You didn't know. So it was just kind of like nobody moved. You didn't know what was going on.
And to be honest with you, in 1985, black Christian conservative outlook was high. And black Christian conservative, I think, is almost a step ahead of racist redneck, Southern Bible Christian conservative. It's almost like, you know, I remember, like, practically everyone in the neighborhood saw the Move people as heathens.
Right.
Yep.
They eat raw meat. They homeschool their kids.
They don't wear clothes.
Like, I remember the Move. My brother used to live on 44th and Powton. So I remember the first Move when Rizzo.
1977 Move.
Yeah.
Naked Move.
So you know, you knew about the organization and what it was, and they had a standoff there. I was just a little bit too young to really understand what it was. So when they kind of moved up in the neighborhood, you kind of, it was still the same chatter. And, you know, you're getting the information off of television, so.
Yeah, I was also, I was heartbroken that day. I just got dumped by, like, my first high school girlfriend.
Ooh. It's the only time a bomb been dropped in the country.
Just saying, man. None of that
shit
matters.
He's like, I got a bomb dropped on my heart.
Yeah, man. Like, I came home. Seriously, like, the second, they dropped that bomb at, like, 3:30. I was right on my porch, and I was just like, let me go watch the last Cosby episode.
For those of us who weren't there, can somebody just give us a brief?
About Move?
Not only about Move, but about this bomb that was dropped.
The
on
role
Phil,
of,
like,
of
I've never heard
Boss
of this.
Bill will now be played by Steve Mandel. All right, so basically, Move, I wouldn't know how to exactly...
I kind of get what Move is, but
the Move organization.
But why was the bomb? He's asking about the correlation between the bomb.
I'm asking about the bomb.
Okay, so according,
This is how Philadelphia people really explain this. This is not a mirror. He's not alone.
I don't want to be the all sides guy, but so basically, I guess there was tension between the neighbors of the 5800 block of Osage Avenue and the Africa family. Which
that's their last name. Steve.
All their last names were Africa, similar to like having an X. They all took the last name of Africa, and it was like 15 people in a house. Everyone had a similar look, dreadlocks. They were more like a primitive. I mean, the thing is that it would be totally normal now in the times that we live in, but back then you saw someone dreadlocks, you were just like, ugh, snakes in your head, and you must smoke drugs like Bob Marley, and you know, and they didn't believe in, they just didn't really believe in the westernized colonization of where America was, their education system and all. So they wanted to homeschool their kids.
They armed themselves as well, right?
Yeah, they armed themselves. So it was like part Black Panther ideology. Yeah. Educate your kids, live like vegetarians. I think the complaint was mainly a noise complaint. In the beginning.
They would blast their music on the roof with a bullhorn and just preach their message.
And they occupied homes. They didn't buy the home.
Oh yeah, like it occupied. I think one of the things that was different was this was in a residential neighborhood. Like so, they were in the middle of the block. Like this, it wasn't like they were in the suburbs or had a farm. They were your next door neighbor.
And not to mention they were already targeted because in 1977, our mayor, Frank Rizzo, who was like, I mean, if you think like Giuliani era New York mixed with Donald Trump mixed with, I mean, just think of the worst racist police state mayor you could have. They had an incident on 44th and Palatine where it was like because of a disturbance there, and then there was a shootout, and he made them all come outside. I just remember the picture of them all naked, like 20 of them, hands in the air, naked, and some of them died. And so there was already tension between the Philadelphia police and the Africa family. So once complaints and protest were happening with the residents, the cops were sort of like, you know, get out the house, and they're like, no, this is our property, yada yada yada. And there was a standoff. It was like a 4 or 5 day standoff where they just seal off the block, and you saw news cameras and news people like bending on their knees, like, you know, this is Jack Jones live on KYW, and we're outside the Africa home. And then on May 13th, man, the commissioner decided to just fly in a helicopter right over their rooftop. I'm trying to figure out, like, what was so distinctive about their rooftop?
They had something on top.
They had a bunker.
Yeah.
But they had a bunker and a rooftop. You realize how precise your aim has to be?
Yeah.
To drop, like, so they basically, I don't know if it was a grenade or whatever, but they dropped some sort of device that just...
They dropped a bomb. It was a legit bomb.
First and last time ever on United States soil.
They dropped a bomb.
And you see how like row homes are in Philadelphia. So it's not like there's a separation. And so they let this house, they were like, we're going to burn you out the house. So they burnt them. Well, they literally killed them all but two. But then the fire spread. And then the next two houses. And then 2 hours later, the entire block was
dummies.
But then 5 hours later, that one big ass block hit the next block, and then that entire block hit the block across the street.
Dumb.
And then that spread. So at some point around 9 o'clock, we got a knock saying there was like the block captain was sort of like, "Okay, just be
prepared
to." I lived on the 52nd block, and this is the 5800 block, so. Around like 9 p.m., even though we thought they would contain the fire, there was like concern that the shit just might spread and spread and spread.
They like, burn all them niggas out. Shit.
Yeah, it was.
Africa's, South Philly's, North Philly, whatever.
It's crazy that I'm asked that anywhere I go in the world.
Really?
Because everybody's kind of like, yo, weren't you guys the people that dropped a bomb on a residential area?
Yeah.
Kind of like, that ain't like some shit you want to be known for.
Yeah. So, records.
Yeah.
That you was heavy. Up. So then you grew up. And then.
Yeah.
No, so how did you start even before DJing, you have to love records. So
completely.
What was the first record you ever purchased, or were you like the youngest?
I was, yeah. You know, it was that the inherited same, the your same brother's. Thing.
Okay.
Well, you know what it is? Like, my brother played bass for the Intruders, so they would actually rehearse in our basement.
Whoa.
Which was a little deep because, you know, you're so young that you're not allowed in the basement. That I would sit on the top step and they would rehearse, and then I would slide down to the next step and slide down to the next step till they finally see me.
Jeffrey.
And they say, get back up, right. You know, get back upstairs. But then my dad was an MC for Count Basie.
Really?
So yeah, my dad, I grew up with 78s in the house, Wes Montgomery, Jimmy Smith, and Arthur Prysock. So you had those. So it was almost like being the youngest, I had the best of everything. I had the 78s. You know, my brother was the Weather Report, Maha Vishnu Orchestra person. And then, of course, your sisters.
How many years older was your brother?
I was the mistake.
Okay.
Like, I was the one that was a little bit a farther gap, that it was kind of like, yeah, this was a hot and heavy night with my mom and dad. Because everybody was like, you know, one person was this, you know, 49, 51,
right.
53. And, you know, it got to the point that it was kind of like, yo, there was like an 8-year gap with me. Like, I wasn't supposed to be here.
Was I playing? Right, right.
But, you know, but I was the sponge. So, you know, and what I give more credit to was my, you know, at about 7 years old, my brother showed me how to take records in and out of the sleeve. Don't put your hands on the records. You hold your thumb at the end. You put your finger in the middle. You bring it out. Don't touch the vinyl like that. And he had set. He had a receiver.
Are
he
you
had
still that meticulous there. With your records
no,
now?
No, no.
Like, we abused the shit out of
them. Yeah, I threw that shit out the window.
Our parents were like that, though.
But he, you know, he was kind of like, listen, if you take care of it, I will let you use my stereo system when he was at work.
What?
At like 7 years old. But what I'm going to tell you was crazy. I'm 7 years old, and I'm making Chick Corea tapes. Cassettes, like he gave me a blank cassette, and I'm listening to music, not really understanding what is attracting me to this music, but I'm like, oh my God, I want this Chick Corea song, and oh look, you know, Return to Forever, and I want that, and this, because his music was my music, and I would make these tapes, and I got sucked in. Like, I didn't understand it was the chord structure, I didn't understand what it was. It was just it was a pure attraction of music. And then the Stevie Wonder and the Marvin Gaye, so.
That's what makes you different. You didn't have the don't touch my stereo
syndrome.
Oh, no,
I had the exact opposite. I had the exact opposite.
See, I had don't touch my stereo, but I also lived in a house with three collectors that hogged the stereo. So I was forced by will to, you know, by force, I had to listen to their music.
Yeah.
And don't touch my stereo in the car, none of that stuff.
Ooh,
so
yeah, yeah.
I was, that music was forced upon me. And then I guess Stockholm Syndrome, I just like, oh.
I used to do this weird thing that this is probably the first time that I'm ever
admitting
this. But I would have a radio and I would go and take a bath, and I would take the radio in the bathroom and I'd plug it up and I would sit the radio on top of the toilet and I would grab the plunger. Because you got to understand, a plunger is a microphone, it's a horn, it's a bass,
wait.
It's a guitar. Oh, I would mimic every, but you know what I did? It made me memorize every guitar solo, lick for lick. Every horn solo. Listen, I would switch.
It's nasty.
I would have that shit. I would play the bass line.
You have it by your mouth. You have it by every place.
The look on everyone.
It's nasty.
Yo, your whole,
it's nasty,
man.
Yeah.
Your whole entire room just turned against you.
The first thing you said is, I use a plunger for a mic. Like, what?
Well, no. Listen.
No, you said lick
for
lick.
Wasn't that literally the engine, everyone in this room, the people across the street at Froger are like.
Listen, man, you know, your imagination in music is basically why I'm sitting here. Because you
look,
you,
I'll admit the same thing.
Yeah.
When James Brown was on Dinah Shore doing Body Heat, and that's the first time I saw him do the microphone tricks, I got the toilet plunger and started doing the microphone tricks. And then my mom was like, oh man, bring the toilet plunger back. So.
See, I didn't do it in front of my mom. I had a lock on the door.
Oh, you knew better.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it's nasty.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I didn't put the plunger near my mouth, you know. I,
but you know, when you plunge, it splash. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you know what? Listen, but the top, like, I wasn't doing it with the rubber part. The rubber part was the horn, and you know, you would grab a roll of toilet paper, and that would be your muzzle on your trumpet.
Wow.
So listen, I went there.
What was the
yes. Steve was just like, wow.
when were you allowed?
Real busy in the bathroom.
When were you allowed to curate the first backyard barbecue or like what you consider your first DJ gig?
I started making mixtapes for all of the dancers. Not necessarily mixtapes. If you had a cassette that had a spring-loaded pause button that it did it instantly, wow. You could, like, you know how sometimes you would have the pause buttons that you would hit it and then it would engage?
Yeah.
If you had a spring-loaded pause button, it would stop automatically.
Oh, instantly, yeah.
So I would just make the Love the Life You Live break that all of the dancers would dance off of. I was the one that had it that went for 10 minutes.
Oh, you did pause tapes.
Yeah, so I would go to the end and you got known for that. And then it just turned into... You know what? I'm going to steal some of my brother's records and not eat lunch the whole time I'm in school. And I'm going downtown because you remember Funko Mart had $3.45 for, you know, $2. And I started a record collection. Like I realized that the record collection is the most important thing as a DJ.
What was the first, because I did, when Rapper's Delight came out, I begged, I think 20 people for a dime. Because it was like $2.99, $3.17. So,
yeah, listen, I had like.
What was the first record that you like?
Barkay's Holy Ghost, Moving by Brass Construction. Because I was a little pre hip hop. So,
right. That's
what they would play at the block parties. I Just Want to Make Your Dream Come True by Mass Production. And, you know, it was all of that. It was the funk and soul bands.
When did you play your first block party?
Probably about. 80, 79, 80. I know I was still in school.
So I know Philly's known for these DJ crews, like Astro Funk and...
Oh, yeah, this was way before that. This was super before that. Like,
so
I wasn't old enough to go off the block, so let alone have a crew. But it was older DJs on the block, and, you know, and that's the first time that you got in front of two turntables and a mixer with... headphones.
You would use their mixer.
Oh yes, I had nothing.
And they trusted you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I was the guy that when they had to go pee, I played.
Yeah, you were like, I was going to say, have you ever been someone's record dude or record?
Always? That's all I was to all of the older guys, and it was just, you know, I don't remember what happened, but I'd gotten to a point that I would do stuff by myself, and you know, from growing up in West Philly, that we have an iconic public enemy type Flavor Flav figure named Crazy D.
Yes.
That if Crazy D was at your block party was guaranteed to be a success. So people would go and recruit him. And they had a block party on 57 Cedar, which is a big block, two-way street. And I remember looking at all of the DJs in the neighborhood. You had Disco Doc, you had Disco Rat, you had E-Man Disco, and all of them had no block parties. They were all there. So it was kind of like when you don't have any other competition and they're watching you and you're 14, 15 years old in the street with 400 or 500 people and you're controlling them, that was the signal. That was the signal in the neighborhood that he got it. Like that was it. It was that one block party.
So how long was it before you were able to... Because I know I had to get a record budget to buy my turntables and my mixer and that sort of thing. So like,
I was in a lot of crews that had equipment.
So one guy would have a mixer, one guy would.
You know, it was kind of like.
But how would you practice though?
I would mentally practice.
No, Jeff, you
listen. I'm dead ass serious. I would practice in my head. That was the only way that I could.
Your 10,000 hours were spent just
in my head.
LL Cool. Gucci.
That was before that.
Oh.
That was before that. But you know what it was? What helped was if you cut Grandmaster Flash super rapping at a party and you killed it, the next week, the DJ in your crew is going to cut that record. He's not going to leave it for you. There wasn't favoritism or any of that. So what happened, then you learned how to cut At the Party by Treacherous 3. And then the next week, he would cut Grandmaster Flash and the Treacherous 3. So you systematically kept going through records, finding routines to do off of these records because it was that competitive. You know, you know the back in the day parties, you know, Grandmaster Flash super rapping was paid 20 times because everybody had a routine off of it.
Right. Who was the first, like, did you pioneer the whole Let's Dance to the Drummer's Beat? Like, what?
That was a classic. Like, but, those, I don't think anybody necessarily, like, that, that was a record that everybody.
Let's Dance to the Drummer's Beat, like, that to me is.
That's Philly. Like, that was one of the things that I would say. Like, that didn't belong to any DJ specifically. That was Philly. That was DJ Spinbad, Lightning Rich. That was every DJ in Philly cut Pump Me Up. They cut Dance's Drummer's Beat. They cut It's Time. They cut, you know, Clear. They mm-hmm. cut, like, there was just a staple of Philly records that all of the DJs cut.
But, I mean, who was the first cat that was just like, yo, instead of just Pump Me Up normal, I'm gonna bump me up, like, ways to
ever. You know what's funny? I think when I saved up enough money and got 1200, because understand, all of this early stuff was done on belt drive turntables, which I think helped me a lot. Where'd because
you, and the yeah. record goes fast. Okay,
but you know what it was? It helped your hands. You know, that's my hands got light because they had no choice but to be light because I was on the wackest equipment in the world. So
without butter rugs, how were you able? Oh, would you put paper. Records under
wax paper? You would go in your mom's and pull out some wax paper, put a record down, you cut it
cut
out,
it
poke the hole in, you start scratching too much, the wax paper would get too big and start sliding off, and you gotta get some new wax paper. We didn't have any of those tools. We didn't have butter rugs, felt, mats. You know, you bought a turntable, you had the big rubber mat on it that you just tossed away. And, you know, a 45 made the record wobble, which you had to have really light hands because...
Wait, you would cut 45s too?
Well, no, you would put a 45 underneath the 12-inch.
Oh, to make it slide better. Okay.
But that didn't work. So the wax paper was it. Or you would cut an album cover and try to use that. You try to get a glossy one because it would slide more. You would spray WD-40 in your mixer, which I know Steve is just like, oh my God.
Seriously, WD-40.
You would spray it in the mixer. You knew it was going to destroy your mixer, but it would make your crossfader cool. So, you know, it was kind of like, listen, I'm gonna kill it for about 3 weeks, and then here comes the static, and it's time to retire. And you would just sit it on the shelf and let it dry out. By the time it dried out, you could do it all over again.
Can I ask y'all a question?
Yes.
And a DJ culture question. Like, what is Philly DJ culture and history mean to hip-hop versus other... Well, of course people would say New York, but what do y'all think that it really means to the culture?
Well, that leads to my next question, because I think that... Yes or no? Did you invent the Transformer scratch?
I don't give that. If I had to give that credit to anybody, I would give that credit to DJ Spinbad, the original Spinbad, who used to DJ for Bell
Biv DeVoe.
Yeah.
He's from Philly.
Yes.
Too.
He was the first person to do something that sounded like that. There was no name. He was doing it with the up and down. It was no rhythm to it. But he was the first person that did it forward and did it backwards. And then basically it was kind of like...
And then did the light bulb go off in your head like,
oh, completely.
Yo.
But you know what it was when you think about it? What Grand Wizard Theodore invented, you took and you said, okay, Flash added some rhythm to it. You know what I mean? Okay, who decided to use the crossfader and cut the scratch on and off? Like, it was all of these add-ons that people did. So when he did it, it was kind of like, okay, he did it. That was dope. But he didn't put any kind of rhythm to it. Like everybody, you know, everybody's rhythm is syncopated. Nobody was like everybody's
okay, so see that right there. So if I was to say what Out Philly DJs hip hop would be, what it would be, something like that. Like it would be like
technique is something that Philly is definitely invented. Technique.
Yeah.
Like most people credit Spinbad you, Cash Money. There's a fourth one. We don't play. What?
Miz.
Miz.
Oh, mm-hmm. Miz. Yeah.
I would say that. Well, okay. I'll ask you who, without hurting people's feelings, who's in your Mount Rushmore?
Ooh.
You're already there. Who's.
Now, is this Mount Rushmore in Philly or just in general?
Philly.
Cash, absolutely. Crazy thing, it would be Cash, Grandmaster Nell, and Cosmic Kev.
Well, I knew you was going to say Kev, but I was. That's wow. That's awesome.
Like, and it's funny.
Kev on the Low is still my idol.
Listen, Kev.
You want my balls, Kev?
Yeah, I'm Kev. Sorry. Listen,
I got to say that.
Kev was incredible. Cosmic Kev was the fastest DJ I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, his finger game is.
Like, he was incredible. Like, I like we get mad at Kev because Kev don't be Kev no more. And I'm like, come on, dude. I know you got that shit in you. That don't ever go nowhere.
Wait, he doesn't do it anymore?
He ain't challenged.
Well, no, I ain't saying like that. I'm saying like, listen, like I said, I get mad that this generation of people who know Cosmic Kev don't know the Cosmic Kev that I know.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, Kev, Grandmaster Nell, like everybody kind of had something. And it was, you know, and it was really dope because, you know, when Cash wasn't necessarily from Philly, Cash was from Yaton. And, you know, we brought Cash into Philly and introduced him to all of the promoters and all the rest of that.
Wait, you don't consider Yaton?
Well, I do.
Okay.
I do. I mean, you know, it's kind of like you kind of count Sharon Hill as Philly.
Yeah, okay, back in the day, you know in the mean? 80s, we used to think that was a suburb.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
But, you know, Nell used to bring us to South Philly because you wouldn't go to South Philly without knowing somebody. You wouldn't damn near trying to go down there and DJ. So you would
you couldn't go into different territories. No,
listen, it wasn't like that. Like, I remember Kev bringing me to Mount Airy to DJ at a block party and someone snatched this guy's glasses right next to me. He had a pair of Neil Styles on just like I did. And they snatched his glasses and didn't snatch mine because I was up there with Kev.
Fuck, I forgot. You grew up in the era of snatching gazelles.
Man. What? Yo. Listen, gazelles, Space Invader hats. I remember all. It was rough.
Yeah, the coned.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yo, I forgot about that era.
It was rough, you know? And understand, I needed glasses. So my shit wasn't for show. My shit.
You had transitions before we even had transitions.
Listen. So somebody snatched my glasses. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find. I got robbed, too. And somebody took my gazelle. They took my glasses, took my sneaks.
What?
Yeah.
At a gig?
Nah. Listen, I was coming home. And you saw it. You saw the whole thing being set up. We were walking.
Across the street diagonally.
You know what's funny is I was with a friend of mine, and we stopped and was talking to this girl, and these two guys walked past, and they walked back past. So it's kind of like the second pass was kind of like that's when you kind of cut your eye. And the third pass, they came back and we kind of looked at each other like, OK, you know what this is. So as they walked left, we walked right. And what he did is he looped around and came through the alley and jumped out the alley with a gun and was just like, give me your glasses. And I just repeated everything that he said because it was in broad daylight. Mm-hmm. So he's like, give me your glasses. I was like, give me your glasses. He's like, give me your chain. Give me my chain. Because I'm like, I'm stalling because my man broke. He broke.
Oh.
I mean, listen, I wasn't mad. Shit, he had a gun. I would have broke too.
Damn it, Will. No, I'm playing.
But he broke. And, you know, I was 2 seconds away from like, okay, he doesn't look too confident with his gun. So I'm about to punch the shit out of him and run. And what happened then, his man came up. So now it was two people. So I was kind of like, okay, all right, let me just give you my glasses and give you my watch. And they got caught.
Oh, they did?
Long story short, he came to court with my sneakers on.
Uh-uh.
You lying.
Listen, you remember how you used to lace the sneakers up?
Yes.
That how all one side would be red and one side would be blue?
Right.
I knew how to lace my sneakers
two
up like
New
that.
York shoestrings in the same shoe?
Yes. I knew how to lace my sneaks up that this whole side would be red, this whole side would be blue. He came in the sneakers that he robbed me in. I let the judge know. He said they were his sneakers. I told him, take the laces out and let him lace them up.
And did he do
it? And he couldn't do it.
Wait, the judge made him do it?
Oh, the judge made him do it. He couldn't do it. And it gave me the sneakers back, and I took the sneakers and threw them in the trash. It's just like, I just don't want you to have them.
Yeah, that would be such a great episode of CSI or LA Law or something. Like,
you're so old. L.A. Law.
Whatever. Whatever. You know what I'm talking about.
Yo. You said L.A.
This nigga
law.
Said L.A. Law. I
love that. No, I get it. That is some crazy.
You should
shit.
Sell that episode.
That's
yeah,
Philly,
one of
man.
Those.
You know.
How did you first hear about the DMCs?
Oh, man.
How many belts? Is that a real thing? Or
just
or is that folklore?
Awards. It wasn't belts. I got a cup. I didn't get a belt.
Was it the very first one?
No, it wasn't the first one. But I got a cup.
What year did you win yours?
86.
Okay. And how many years were they in existence?
Oh, man. It was there for a couple of years before that. But it was funny because when I got in, 50% of the DJs were mixers. So they got really, really mad at me because I kind of changed the whole landscape of the DMC.
So before you came,
listen, before
what
I
was
came,
it?
Listen, the dude was playing and he, I need love. And he's mixing the next record. And I came in like,
oh, no technique
last allowed. Dance, last dance. And it was just like, we can't keep up with that.
What's the DMCs?
Disco Mix Club.
Yo, I never knew that's what DMC stood for.
Is that like
was.
The scene in
but think
Juice,
about it.
Right?
The Disco Mix
yes.
Club.
It's
yeah.
like Juice.
Yes. But, so you're saying that before
DJ
you came in, before you came in, it was just about who had the hottest mix in 5 minutes?
Pretty much.
Who were the previous winners before?
I don't know.
So who was going up against you now?
I want to say, well, because it was two. It was the New Music Seminar, and it was the Disco Mix Club. Disco Mix Club, I remember Vandy C was in it, and it was a couple other DJs. I think WizKid was in it. I don't know the mixer guys. It was
Is there
just, you know,
DJ
when somebody,
Cheese from Philly as well?
He's not from Philly. He's from Jersey. He was Tri-State. In, he was we were he was I was in the New Music Seminar with him. He was the DMC World Champ. At the time.
And how did you defeat him?
What do you mean how? I was better.
Okay.
But you know what? Like, listen, and he's cool. You know, I love that brother. It was just funny at that point in time. I never really considered myself a competition guy. Like, listen, I like to do it. I was just kind of like, damn, I'm really mad that everybody's trying to put this person up against you. It's just like, I enjoy doing this. I ain't playing basketball to win the dunk contest. I just like playing ball. But that was a way to get your name out. So when I got into the New Music Seminar, being from Philly.
What did you cut with?
I did, that was when I did the Bought a Mansion for Your Mother thing. From,
oh,
yeah.
Brought a mansion
yeah,
for
and,
my
and
mother.
And broke it down.
Okay.
But it was kind of like he, right before we went on, I went to shake his hand, and he didn't shake mine. I was just like, hey, man, what's up? Good luck. You know, because I was like, man, I like you. You got the King Cut record out. And he wouldn't shake my hand. You know. But it was literally one of those things that I'm kind of like, listen, the equipment was messing up. I realized that nobody was using their own needles. Nobody was using – I won that with technology because the equipment that everybody was using – everybody lost on the side. Like, it was two setups. The setup on the left, everybody lost because it was jumping. And when he didn't shake my hand, I deliberately walked to the left side.
To make sure
You know, I was like, no, I'm going to show you that I'm going to show you completely. And I reached
Wait,
in my bad.
You purposely took
I purposely took the bad side. Like, Will was pissed off. Because everybody was like, when you go up there, go to the right side. And I walked up and went to the left side. And I reached in my bag and I put my own needles on. I had some ADC needles with quarters on top. And I reached and I put my wax paper on. And I put my record on. And the funny thing, which Steve is going to kill me, I reached in my bag. And while everybody was looking, I took the long straw and said, shh.
The
and
red
sprayed
straw.
That crossfader. And as soon as it got loose, I went in my headphones and I tested the left turntable and I tested the right one and I looked out at the crowd at Will and I was like,
"Yeah, you Jiffy lubed that motherfucker."
That's it. I
so
was like,
"Wait
I got
a minute!"
Him.
Like none of those DJs even thought or
none.
Knew
none
to weight their shit
none
or balance
none.
Only you were doing that.
Just me. And once I knew, I was kind of like, I'm good. And I started breaking stuff down, doing rhythm scratches with Jive Rhythm Scratch, and, you know, just stuff that people hadn't seen or heard before.
And that's how you won.
That was it.
I see. All right. I got to get to your production phase. I know. Jeff is like,
this has got to, we're going to have him back for a whole nother
I'm like,
episode,
production, you know? Phase. I told you before he got here, I was like, I don't know how we going to do this.
This is a two-parter that's waiting to happen.
I'm not stopping the story. It's
God, oh, no, I'm just, God's I'm not trying you. To stop. I'm just saying,
I see.
It's he's going to
But let's go. You know, we're going as far back as we can get, and then we're going to make him come back again.
Yes. Okay. So how did you partner with Will?
You know, everybody had a rap group. Everybody had an MC. Everybody had a DJ.
Wait, before I ask that, I heard a mixtape once of you battling Victor Duplay.
You mean Victor Cook?
Vic the Dick.
It wasn't.
Who put that mixtape online?
It wasn't a battle. It was people just recorded, but it was kind of like people used to do call and responses with records.
But I thought he was your record dude.
No, like, you know, Vic was the young guy that used to come over the house and I would show him stuff.
Yeah, but then what happened with this thing like, yo, battle with Jazzy Jeff and Vic the Dick?
Nah.
Well, and you know how did he ever get that title?
What happened was Vic went on at a Central High party, and as a joke, he took a jab at me with records, because we're all cool.
Right.
He took a jab at me with records, so it was kind of like, okay, you're going to take a jab at me. You don't understand that I got this laundry list of things that I can do to you. And Ice, my MC at the time, was the one that was like Vic the Dick. So now, show you, because it came out on a mixtape, you don't get a chance to see what actually happened. You only hear it.
Right.
So everybody's like, oh my God, you killed Vic. And it was like, it wasn't like that.
Oh, y'all just joking on stage.
Yeah.
Can I give a millennial footnote real quick to all the millennials? Vic the Dick, a.k.a. Victor Cook, a.k.a. Victor Duplay. You may know him from a party called Kiss and Grind.
Yeah.
There we go.
The God of Kiss and Grind.
Yes.
that's come up with the century.
And one of the producers of one of my favorite Erykah Badu songs, Eric Green Eyes. I always like to throw that in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Victor Cook.
Victor. Cook. Mama called him Cook.
Yes. No. He. So wait. Actually, you mentioned something very crucial. For Philadelphia hip hop heads, the high school jams, how were they booked? Because those were like on level of college jams.
But you know what? All of the DJs were from Central High. Like Vic went to Central.
Where did you go to high school?
I was in Bartram,
went to Bartram.
Yeah, I was out of school by then.
Oh, I thought you were overbooked.
But it was just kind of like I got booked because of my affiliation with Vic and everybody else. So,
but you know. Was there an agent that just had y'all going to high school?
No, an agent.
You mean an agent?
Bobby Dance.
Oh man, 60th and Latona Street. Go
but
get
y'all
your money.
Kept working, didn't y'all? Yeah. I thought an agent was a guy that, you know, did these things.
No, you just, you know, you knew the guy who was throwing a party. And you wanted to kind of be his favorite because he would, you know. And then if he knew that people followed you, you know, they would book you.
But you never desired to be on like Lady B's Street Beat on Power 99 or like not, what was your goal?
Not
like,
the radio DJ. You know what? I didn't know. Like this was weird because this was at a point in time when I'm out of school and I don't tell anybody that I'm a DJ. Like what kind of DJ? You know, you were a radio DJ then. So, you know, my mom's friends come to me, oh, Jeff, you out of school. What are you doing now? You kind of like,
were
I'm a DJ.
Were you in college? Or no. You didn't? Okay.
It's kind of like, what are you doing now? It's like, I'm a DJ. And you don't tell somebody, I do block parties and, you know, house parties that I'm setting up on people's washing machines and all of it. Like, that wasn't a viable.
So back then, if I wanted to book Jazzy Jeff.
Oh, listen, I had my cool cards.
In 83 or 80.
Yeah, listen, you find your man who worked at the printing store and you would get the card and somebody would design it and you would put your home number on it.
So in 83, how much could I book you for?
Oh, man, that was a cool $35.
Ooh, Lord.
Wait, what?
Oh, ooh. Come on, man. We was just
35
trying to get,
bucks?
We was trying to get money to go to McDonald's on 40th Street.
What? Sound like a Cosby Show episode.
At Penn State, that's at it. University of Penn.
Like, you wasn't getting money.
I'm thinking that I got to pay you $250 bucks to.
Man, I wish somebody paid me $250 bucks.
But you was wearing EKs and your kicks was right.
I mean, listen, because I had a job. I worked at Roy Rogers.
Okay, there we go.
Worked at where? Which Roy Rogers?
On 40th Street. How do you think I know about 40th Street so well?
I lived in that Roy Rogers.
Come on. I was the chicken cook. Makes a lot of sense now, don't it?
Yes, it totally does. There you go. Oh, my God. This totally makes sense. This absolutely makes sense now. Wait, you worked at that Roy Rogers?
Yes.
Dude, I guarantee you, I've 65% of all my nutrition intake.
Roy Rogers was a shit.
I worked at the Roy Rogers, and then I moved up the street and started working for Steve's Ice Cream.
Steve's Ice Cream on...
Yeah, what? With the mix, man, I was the king of the mix-ins.
So y'all knew each other, but y'all didn't know each other?
I guarantee you I ran into Jeff without knowing
a million times.
Asking for some free ice cream, he's like, I only know you.
All right, wait, let me bring the mood down real quick. Side note, Philadelphia Tribune. Gary Heidnik used to, you guys started frowning already. Gary Heidnik would often lure the women inside of that Roy Rogers on 40th Street.
Really?
To do what? What do you do? Who is he? What do you do?
Gary Heidnik was sort of our...
Yeah.
Who's Milwaukee?
Yeah.
I hate to do that noise.
Yeah.
Silence
of the Lamb dude.
Yeah. Shit, he was eating them?
Who's Milwaukee?
Yeah, that's... not David Banner.
David Banner?
David. He got killed in jail. David. Oh, this is
Koresh?
No, Koresh.
The blonde.
The guy who ate everybody.
Yeah.
He liked it
brown.
Fuck his name.
We had a
I gotta look it up now.
A version of that in name. Philly. I didn't know he
And he lived at Ethan Butler at that.
And he ate them. God, you Philly people, y'all have such history.
He really? Used the Fixins bar to dress it up.
Jeffrey Dahmer. So Gary Heidnik was our Jeffrey Dahmer. Side note, at his trial, you know his key hip-hop history. You know was a key witness at his trial, at Gary Heidnik's trial? Said G.
From Ultramagnetic? Mm.
For some weird reason, either Said G used to talk to this girl in Philly, but he lived... crashed in North Philly 86, 87, like between his Ultramagnetic years or whatever. But he had to, for some reason, he was testifying in that Gary Heidnik trial.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah. Why did I just bring the mood down?
No, it's fine.
Yeah, you just,
tasty.
You just completely destroyed my Roy Rogers days.
Sorry.
Yeah. I gave... Oh man, Gary! Wow, I'm fixed him chicken.
This is not funny.
Jeff's killer chicken.
I heard you can cook.
So, from doing those central. This is weird because this actually takes us back to the beginning of this conversation with. Pleasing yourself musically and serving the crowd musically. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that there's sort of a running theme with most of the guests that are on QLS, in which high pressured DJed scenarios make better producers. Jimmy Jam would often talk about having to DJ for 2,000 kids in Minnesota, but that made him more in tune to become Jimmy Jam. And of course, Dr. Dre, his story is that, you know, if you played the wrong record, you could get shot.
Yeah, I know that part.
So I don't know. I feel like I'm in such a privileged era because, like, my celebrity allows me to do silly shit. Like, I could play a Sesame Street record if I want to. And it's like, Questlove's is, you know, I'll play the Curly Shuffle, Three Stooges shit, whatever. But it's like, how are you able to experiment? Or is it just like, yo, I got to play the hottest record right now and that's it?
No.
And you got like, I assume these gigs are like 3 to 4 hours, correct?
No. You do 3 to 4 hours. I do two.
I'll do two. You can make a point in 2 hours?
Yes. Like, and I can make a point however long, but it's one of the most important things is for me to know how long, because for me to tell the story, I have to end. I get absolutely pissed off
when they cut you
if
off.
I am not able to end, because every, you know, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And you just, you once I know how long it is, I kind of know where to go.
But how can you tell that story in 2 hours, though? Because the music is so...
It's possible to tell that story in 30 minutes. Like, it all depends, you know, it
See,
might not
Lydie's
be...
making faces now, like, it's so easy.
I'm not saying it's easy,
no,
but
it's not easy.
Said than done.
It's like, it's actually harder to do it in a shorter amount of time.
Yes, it's hard as hell.
You know, because you don't get a chance to build up. You don't get a chance to kind of get into it.
You only... So when you do these gigs around the world, it's only for 2 hours?
Yep.
Oh, yep. Not even three?
Well, see, you know what it is? You got to keep in mind, I play really, really high impact. When you play high impact, you can't high impact people for over
Ever.
2 hours. Like, there was so many
fatigue.
Lessons that I've learned. I remember doing an MSU homecoming, and it was one of those things that I just was hitting them and hitting them and hitting them. And I remember paying attention to this guy. He was a little bit heavy, and he was dancing, and it was almost like, you were trying to get off the floor.
Right.
And I keep playing something that, and when I tell you he was dripping and soaking wet, and it got to a point that I was like, you're not enjoying yourself anymore. Like, you're at a fucking health reason. You're at a point that you're not enjoying. And it was kind of like, wow, Jeff, you know what you have to do? You got to take people on a mm-hmm. roller coaster ride. You got, like, it's cool to send people to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I realized a long time? Like, I didn't come up playing reggae because, like, and I'm gonna tell you why. There were so many reggae records. You get, you know, I'm coming from funk, soul, mm-hmm. rock, all the rest of this. I couldn't add reggae into my set because it was way too much. And it was so many rhythms that changed that it was just kind of like, you know what? I'm gonna leave that to someone else. But what I realized is if I didn't play reggae, people didn't leave who wanted to hear reggae. Once you get them in, nobody's leaving. That's the first lesson as a DJ that you have to understand. Yeah, I'm not paying $20 and the DJ suck to the point that I'm going to leave. I'm going to be mad at you, but I'm going to stay. So because I know that you're there, my job is, you know what? If you satisfy everybody in the room for 45 minutes, they walk out saying I had a great time. So it gives me the ability to satisfy three different groups of people
right.
for 45 minutes. See, everybody walks out like, yo, he killed it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't think. Case in point, how long do people dance at a wedding reception? 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Tops.
Yeah.
Everybody get on the floor with the bride and the groom. You boom, 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 boom. And it's kind of like, okay, cut the cake and we out.
Yeah.
And I'm good. Like, we not at the, you know, this ain't Danceteria, because people who went to those marathon dance things, they went there to dance all night. That's not the average club. The average club is I'm a drink, I'm a find a girl, and I'm a dance. It's not the whole thing.
And as I'm just going to say, as the person dancing on the floor, we appreciate the break to go get the drink, to not mess up your hair and sweat your hair out and shit and be like, oh, good. He's going to take a, oh, good, I can breathe for a second. Like, we just appreciate it.
You know what? It's funny you said about reggae, because I feel as though reggae is the one genre that will never die mm-hmm. and that is universally loved by everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My first 10 records are always the reggae records because I have to test the room. That's the one, like, Murder, She Wrote will never die in my lifetime. So that's usually, like, my first record. And with the stuff that Drake is doing now that's sort of, like, close
to
that.
All that stuff blends together.
It fits in. So usually my first 10 records are that. And it buys me time to see. Now, it's weird because I used to be the DJ that, like, came out the box, hit, 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 hit. But then I learned, like, after 17, there's fatigue.
Yeah.
And then I started feeling myself to the point where I got off with playing the worst shit ever. No, only because I knew what I had around the corner.
But how great is that feeling? I tell people, it's amazing. If I got 2,000 people in front of me and I know I got you, I know what the next five records are going to do to you.
Right.
Like, you don't know. Like, I'm sitting there like, oh my God. It, oh my, as, like, Fess, when we were in Africa, mm-hmm. and I, because I have this thing that I play the original of Annie Up, the right. Soul Sister. So you know right. it's fast. So mm-hmm. I was, you know, dun, 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 and Soul Sister. So everybody's kind of have this look because it's kind of like,
what's he doing?
You just changed the tempo. Like, it's almost like, damn, did he fuck up? And I'm playing it, and you got to sell it. Like, we selling it. Fess over there dancing, Dane dancing. And when it morphs into it, the look on everybody's face oh, shit. Oh, and it's pandemonium. But so when I drop that, I'm excited because I'm kind of like, I'm looking at the dude that's kind of like, what's he doing, man? This dude. And I'm like, and I'm just staring straight in his face. Just wait. Because, you know, Annie Up is kind of like mm-hmm. where all the ladies at
riot time.
For, yeah, that's the Beyonce for dudes.
It right. is.
So it's kind of like, I'm sitting there like, okay, go ahead, stand there with that stone face.
And then he loses his mind.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so listen, just in closing, because I also want to get, listen, you said for the record, we are doing part two.
Okay, but part two gonna be real long too. We talking Touch of Jazz. We talking.
We gotta get to the production stuff.
All right,
and then, but I do want to talk about the M3 project. Explain to me how it came to be. And you and Fest.
I wanted this to be the last installment of the Magnificent series, not the last record that I'm gonna do. The Magnificent series was always a trilogy to me. I wanted to be the Magnificent Return of Magnificent M3. I needed to let the music industry kind of get completely out of my way. There's certain shit that just didn't make sense to me that I wanted to kind of fix. You know, the first thing that I fixed was having your own studio, because now I can control the creative process. I can make whatever I want. Nobody can tell me that. I just didn't have it down to how to release your music and get it to everybody. So social media and just the changing world that we live in allowed all of that to happen. And that's why it was an 11-year gap between the Return of the Magnificent to this one. But I also wanted to do a record because I made the mistake by making the prototypical, let me have all of these guests on my record, only to realize that there's no way humanly possible that we're ever going to do a show.
Mm. Isn't that frustrating?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So it just got to a point that it was kind of like, listen, I'm, you know, as many dates as we're doing, how can I make this record to the point that we can go out and support
it? And actually
it?
Promote it.
But did you do that with the other Magnificent stuff?
Oh, listen, I had Method Man, CL Smooth. And,
yeah, everybody.
You know, it was just kind of like, yeah, so this will never be live.
That's what I meant. Yeah, like, did they tour with it? They never toured with it. Right?
Ever.
Yeah.
The first one, yeah, Eminem and Slum Village and all this.
So, you know, it was kind of like, you know, me and Dane have been on the road for 6-7 years. I've made, Fest was on The Return of the Magnificent. Mm-hmm. The funny thing was when I made The Return of the Magnificent, my son Amir was 5.
Right.
So, you know, it was all, and then just sitting down kind of piecing it together, you know, I was kind of like, listen, you know what I want to do? First of all, I want to bring back the era of Cold Crush. I want to bring back the era of Tribe, bring back the era of De La Soul, of MCs going back and forth mm-hmm. with each other. Because one of the things that I realized, especially being a DJ, is when you've been around during a cycle, when AM and I would DJ together and we would do 2x4 sets, which basically both of us are playing at the same time, people would lose their mind. And I'm like, I did this 25 years ago with Cash Money. Like, it's not new.
Wait, you DJed with Cash Money before?
Yeah, we would do 2x4 style.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's why I never asked the question.
Yeah, we would do that. But it's just, what it did is it kind of let me know, when the cycle has repeated itself, everything starts over. You know, it's kind of like the person who's like, oh my God, Transformers. And you're kind of like, oh wow, you completely missed the cartoon, huh?
Yeah.
Like, you think it started now. So it's from knowing that from the DJ side, I'm kind of like, you know, Migos don't actually tag team when they rap. Like, they're not doing De La Soul or Cold Crush stuff. So no one understands about that. So I was like, yo, I'm just reinventing the wheel. That what I think is really dope is I have 3 generations mm-hmm. of MCs, that I have Fess, who's 40, Dane, who's 20, and Amir, who's 18. But they all are MCs. They all spit.
And you can hear their different perspectives in the songs. I was listening to it. I was like, this is kind of dope. Like three
because
different
it's men. Like, yeah. Everybody's kind of like, oh, man, you know, is it the this? Is it this? It's kind of like, I hate categorizing music. I got two categories. It's good music and bad music. I don't care the genres, all the rest of that shit, because, you know, you would go into a Tower Records and you couldn't find the shit that you wanted because you classified it as one thing and they classified it as something else. And I just kind of wish that the entire store was in alphabetical order because I could probably find everything that I wanted
faster. Right.
So it's just it wasn't genre specific. You know, I took 2 weeks and we came in and we made all of the music. All of the music on the album is live instrumentation. And I did it in a way because it was kind of like, okay, you know, I don't necessarily want you to know. I want you to feel the music. I don't want you to dissect it. And then invited Dane Rhymefest and Amir to come in and Aaron Camper. And we, you know, recorded all of the vocals and it was like, that was it.
Shout out to Aaron Camper.
Yes. Also.
Shout out to Aaron Camper.
Maryland represent.
So I'm about to say.
And then we cheat because traveling around the world, if you watched any of the videos that we put out, we cheat and shoot videos in all of the places that we go. So the first video, Skater's Paradise, which is actually about traveling around the world and how some people would rather spend $1,000 on a stripper to dance instead of spending $1,000 on a trip to Japan.
Mm.
You know, we cheated and shot the video all over the world.
That's good business.
That's good business. That's
good business. Well, Jeff, I'm holding you to, yes, to another part two.
One. We have two extra episodes to do. We have to do Jeff and then Rhymefest. He got to come back and he got to do his own episode.
Well, absolutely.
And talk about how he be trying to save the world and shit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Fess. I take Fess around the world with me because he saves the world as we go.
True indeed.
I believe it.
I've never been that person that just kind of ventures off. And we would come down and I'll say, dang, where's Fess? And he was like, I don't know.
At a church mission.
And Fess would just be like, yo, I just got with some people and they took me out in Kenya. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I wouldn't have did that. But Fess comes back and listen, we were in Bali and Fess came back after being gone all day that we almost about to send a search party out. And Fess was like, yeah, I went to a brothel and I was sitting outside talking to three prostitutes and a cop.
Yes.
And he had like a 5-hour conversation, but came back with the entire information on the country of Bali.
Indonesia.
Indonesia.
You better correct him.
Was it? Oh,
tomato, tomato, potato,
yeah,
patata.
Yeah.
Potato, patata.
So yeah, you know, Fess is our cultural attaché.
Yeah, Fess.
How's Obama doing? I just figured you know him.
Well, you know, actually, we're having some issues in Chicago, you know? Because, you know, they got the Obama Library that's coming to the South Side. It's a $500 million project. It's going to project it $3 billion for the South Side of Chicago. But Obama, who was a community organizer, wouldn't sign a community benefits agreement. And that community benefits
that
agreement that makes sure people don't get Harlemed out and Brooklyn out. You know what I mean?
Gentrified.
Like when you see what's happening in New York, it's coming to your neighborhood soon.
I'm from D.C., so trust that
you
it,
already
I know.
Yeah.
But
right?
Didn't it already happen in Chicago? Because
the city council voted on it today and pushed it through. And so, like, you know, basically, you know, the preachers and Obama, they got to get like, it's Obama, just trust them. And the community is like, hold on, wait, this $3 billion, we need this in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, nah, you're not getting it in writing. A lot of times too, you know, what's interesting when this is what black people got to be careful of. When we make big money and do big projects, who's in the middle of us in the community?
Mm.
It's always the middleman.
The middleman.
And he usually don't look like the man.
And he don't look like the one at the bottom or at the top sometimes.
He kind of look like Steve.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Steve Cool is quiet.
No, he is, but I just meant right now.
Hey, I'm going to get him an endorsement deal with WD-40 in, okay?
So you know what?
But you know, I ain't got to spray my mixers no more because now they got a knob to make it tight or loose.
Lesson learned. I heard you, Ron Fest, over there.
Yeah.
Watch out for the middleman.
Well, you know.
He talks to rich people. I'm not there yet, but for you and Jeff, y'all should watch out for the middleman.
If you see a rich person, let me know.
I didn't say wealthy. At least rich. Come on, Negroes. Man, don't try to play a player.
Rich and culture.
I got to wind this episode so I can go to my job.
You can be rich with
rich
a job.
Rich and culture.
Goodbye. I can't.
Look, I'm just paying off my mama house. That's all I'm doing.
Oh, my God. Okay, they broke.
Listen, on behalf of DJ DJ Jazzy Jeff, Ron Fest, Sugar Steve, Fontigolo, and his countertops.
That's my man. I love Fonte, man. We speak like twice.
Yeah, he real salty that he didn't. Yeah, he real salty.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he though with his countertops?
Exactly. He should have been here. I feel you.
I could dig him on the countertops. I feel
you. But Ron Fest coming back, so there you go.
There you go. All right, and also unpaid bill on Sesame Street and Boss Bill. Abil, son.
Steven.
Yeah, everyone. This is Questlove Supreme. And this is Questlove only on Pandora. We will see you on the next go round. Thank you. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, you hate to hear it happen, but you know, that's part one of the great Jazzy Jeff. Stay tuned for part two, where we get more stories of his life with Will Smith, making records, DJing, making music, following his passion. The greatest ever. Jazzy Jeff, QLS Classic, part two, coming up next time. Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.